Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, back in 1929, a group of 99 female pilots led by Amelia Earhart got together to break down barriers for women in flight. 90 years later, the 99s are still at it. I'll talk with pilot Minetta Gardiner, who's the chair of the 99s in Iowa. We'll talk about her love of flying and competing in the Women's Only Air Race Classic. But first, with the hustle and bustle of daily life, it can be hard to slow down and really be present. Sometimes it's hard to be kind, to recognize the challenges that those around us are facing. In the new essay collection, One Moment of a Single Day, writer Tracy Kelly and photographer Lynn Casey invite us to slow down, to pay attention to the world around us, and to engage with our fellow human travelers. I'll bring Lynn Casey into the conversation in a few minutes, but I want to start with Tracy Kelly. She lives in Des Moines. She shares her work in many different ways. She teaches yoga. She helps people listen to each other through interpersonal communication workshops, and she is with me now. Hello, Tracy.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Well, we're really honored to be able to talk about the book and be with you in a different kind of setting.
So tell me where the idea for this collection came from. These essays have been a part of your life for a long time, right?
Some of them have, yes. I think the origin point was when you start to realize that some of the moments you're having aren't really coincidence, and they start to inform you in ways that perhaps you weren't expecting. And I think for any particular artist, be they a writer or a visual artist or what have you, they get that inspiration and it kind of rolls around like a little marble in their head for a while, and then it starts to emerge. And I started putting together a couple of the essays after some of these encounters were just too unique to let go of. And that's kind of how the idea started.
In putting this collection together, did it help you see your work in a new way?
Yes. I've been an essayist for many years online and in print, but putting together a collection is always an interesting dynamic because you always wonder, oh, does this really fit here? What kind of message does this have? And many writing professors will say, don't try to force a theme. You know, that'll trip you up every time. Just go ahead and go with what you're really resonating with and see how it all comes together. And little by little, this collection started to reveal itself in a way that had a much broader theme that even I wasn't expecting. And that's kind of important when you're trying to create some cohesiveness in some of these writings.
You are sharing a lot of yourself and a lot of your personal philosophy in these essays. I'm curious, how do you think you came to interacting with the world this way? How did you develop that skill and that understanding of the importance of slowing down and engaging?
I think part of it has to do with simply I am a very kind of receptive person. And I started learning about mindful listening initially through yoga practice, recognizing that, and I'm sure a lot of other practitioners agree, that when you create a little bit of silence and space, a lot of messages come to you, or maybe you resolve a certain issue. And as you mentioned at the beginning of the program, sometimes the hustle and bustle is just a little too much for us, and we don't create those moments of stillness. Through my practice and through teaching, I've recognized that I was allowing myself to be more open, to be a little bit more of that receptor. And I don't know, sometimes I'm kind of a friendly gal, too, so I can talk, no stranger to me anywhere, really. I can pretty much have a conversation with just about anyone, a stone, a tree, whatever, and so it makes it a little bit easier. But some of these stories really, I think, have more to do with the reflection of what these people wanted to say, and if I was going to be in the position where I was willing to hear what they had to say.
Why don't you tell us about one of these stories so people can get an idea of what we're talking about? Tell me a little bit about your essay, Sam and Frida, and the story that led up to this essay.
Oh, gosh, Sam and Frida are wonderful. In a nutshell, some friends and I were outside on a Des Moines street one night, and we noticed two individuals walking with every single item they owned. They had sweaters around their necks. They were lugging bags and suitcases, and Frida had a walker. And Sam approached me and asked if he could call a friend who was going to give them lodging for the night. And in that situation, you know, it's pitch black, and Des Moines streets aren't really that scary, but it's still pitch black, and you're getting ready to go home, and all of a sudden a stranger approaches you. There's definitely an Iowa nice, but there's also that instance where you have to kind of gauge what's happening with a total stranger. And so I put the number into my phone, I let Sam call his friend, and when I heard that the lodging was only a few blocks away, I thought, well, they're carrying every single thing they have. They're walking. Why don't I just give them a ride? And I have an SUV, so that's a little bit easier to pack in with stuff. And on that trip, not only were they incredibly grateful for the short blocks that we were going to travel because it just eased a little bit of them having to carry everything, but it really gave me an opportunity to hear them. And they wanted to tell me what was going on in their lives. And they wanted to tell me who they were before this moment. And that's an element that I get into in the essay. And that's probably the most shocking aspect of recognizing that we often see faces or labels attached to aspects of homelessness. But until we actually engage with someone, we don't know what their story is. We don't know how they came to be there. So the story, the essay concludes with what happened on site when we got to their friend's apartment and kind of my reflection on the fact that I did about as much as I could do in that particular moment. And that's my final reflection on the essay, where I wondered if I could have done more. And readers' responses to Sam and Frida simply boil down to what happened to them. Well, we're always asking that question, aren't we? And do we ever know the answer to what happened when we see someone who's putting up a sign or asking for a donation or walking down the street with everything they own? We don't know what happens.
So many people would have turned the other way, and not without reason. I mean, I think a lot of us are afraid of people who are in compromised circumstances. We know that there are some serious problems that can lead people to be in those situations. I think we're also afraid of getting involved because of how much it might cost us personally, emotionally, financially. Were those fears going through your mind?
When I talked about it the next day, they certainly were going through my husband's mind. And so he is kind of used to me doing this from time to time. I think the thing that really concerned him was that it was at night. He had no idea where I was and wouldn't have any idea where I might end up. And so when I told him about the next day, yeah, all those things came to mind. I honestly, this is absolutely true, I had no fear at all. And I think part of it is because I had a chance to look in their eyes and see what they were hurting from. I may not have known what they were hurting from, but I certainly knew that that was the place they were in. And yet I still only did a little bit. I certainly didn't do a lot of other things that I could have possibly done. But if that just gave them another point of safe travel on their journey, I didn't have any inhibitions about doing that. And so, you know, there's no medal or anything there. It's just, but no, I didn't feel any fear at all. For them, mostly, I think.
You reveal a lot about yourself in the book, and I know that you don't want to give things away because there are some interesting surprises in some of these essays. But you grew up in really difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if, when you look at Sam and Frida, if part of your reaction is informed by thinking, that could be me. That could have been me if things had been just a little bit different.
That's very prescient of you. I think one of the essays in the book, Nanny, kind of explains a little bit about that helping hand being extended. And what I learned when I was growing up and what I learned in my teenage years about how there are many good people in the world. How do they end up influencing us? How do they kind of soften the rough edges a little bit and give us a soft place to land? And how do we honor them by being able to continue their good works, seemingly, you know, without any particular provocation, but yet they could have been just passing by as well and giving me a ride at one time. And that aspect of shared humanity is something that I really wanted to explore in general in the book, especially in the essay Nanny, where this woman didn't have to be my surrogate grandmother. She just was. And that was her. And I love that about her. And that's something that I miss about her. She's since passed. And recognizing that if we keep ourselves open to not only the experiences that may sharply educate us, but also the experiences that really do move us and prompt us to take positive action. There are a lot of us like that in the world, and that's very comforting.
You mentioned Nanny, your surrogate grandmother, who helped you out a lot when you were a teenager. In taking a good hard look at your past, what do you think was it that allowed you to develop into the woman that you are today? Because as I said before, things could have gone very differently.
Well, this is a therapy session now.
No charge.
Thank you. I think it's a balance of recognizing that we all have the our actual brains are designed to always be aware of threat. And it takes 10 positive thoughts to negate one negative thought. I find that endlessly fascinating. And it's not so much about being always the eternal optimist, but recognizing that in the course of a day, you're going to have a lot of moments that give you a pause and help you become more grateful and help you recognize that you probably are more surrounded by helpful people than not. And those were definitely things that I learned along the way that kind of continued to help keep me in the right spot and allow me to be more open and receptive and wanting to be curious about other people and places and things, to recognize that they're all influencing me in one way, shape, or form. How I choose to filter them, or more appropriately, not filter them, is probably the best lesson I could have received.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Tracy Kelly. She is the author of the new essay collection, One Moment of a Single Day. And this is not just an essay collection. It's also a collection of beautiful photographs. And I'm going to bring photographer Lynn Casey into the conversation in just a moment as well. Then coming up later this hour, we'll talk about women in aviation. I'll have a conversation with pilot Minetta Gardiner about her love of flying and also competing in the Women's Only Air Race Classic. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me right now is Tracy Kelly. She is the author of a new collection of essays called One Moment of a Single Day. And in the book, she takes some moments from her life and shares them with us in an effort to help all of us slow down, engage with those around us, and appreciate what's going on in our lives and in the lives of others. She partnered on this book with photographer Lynn Casey, and I want to bring Lynn Casey into the conversation now. She's a photographer whose work is displayed at galleries throughout the Midwest and often published in Shutterbug magazine. She lives in Michigan. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Charity. How are you this morning?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Now, I want to know how the two of you got together. Lynn, I'll let you go first, but where did this partnership begin?
Well, the partnership began actually through Facebook. Tracy and I had known each other for many, many years. She was kind of a surrogate granddaughter to my mother, and they remained in contact for my mom's whole life. And through Facebook, we reconnected. She liked my photographs, and we talked about this project actually for quite some time before it came to fruition.
All right. And so is your mother one of the people written about in the book, Lynn?
No, she is
okay.
not.
So you have a bunch of surrogate of those grandmothers. Tracy.
Next time we'll get Carol in there. Yeah.
No, and she was a character, but Tracy talks about those people who helped along the way with her. And my mother was one of those.
All right. And Tracy, what was it about Lynn's work that drew you in and made you think that this pairs so well with your ideas?
Well, Lynn has a beautiful eye. She really knows how to sit for a long period of time, whether she's sitting in a deer blind somewhere out in the woods or she's just sitting by the lake, and she has no problem just keeping her camera on her lap and waiting. And then, like many photographers, will snap 150 pictures until she gets the one that really resonates with her. And I've loved her work from the start. I was really always very proud of the artistry she was choosing to follow. And it seemed as though this book would have a little bit more of an impact with readers if they also had an opportunity to just pause after every essay. And being able to gaze upon some of the photos that Lynn chose to put in the collection really makes all the difference.
Well, and Lynn, looking at your photos, I like to take pictures myself, although I'm not nearly as gifted as you. And sometimes I find that when I'm taking pictures, it does make me stop and look at details and engage with my surroundings more than I would just passing through. Tell me what taking pictures does for you.
Well, it engages me in the world around me, and it makes me slow down. And I share them actually on Facebook. It's not for money or recognition so much as it is to help people, again, stop and take in that moment, that single moment that's not going to come around again because of the lighting, whether it's the raindrops or whether it's this morning it was an absolutely saturated eagle sitting in my tree.
You seem to love raindrops. Is that one of those really special things for you when the rain starts falling? Do you start thinking about what it can show you?
Yes, and when you go outside, and a lot of it's reflective. Those drops reflect all kinds of things around them. And one of the things that I've noticed is people, through those drops, people tell me that my images help them to stop and slow down and take a look at things more closely. And to me, that's one of the greatest compliments that I can have, that I have moved people to slow down and take that moment and engage in it, even through a visual perspective.
Now, sometimes when, especially having kids, when I'm at a concert or, something that my children are engaged in, I notice all the cameras out and I worry that we're watching life through a tiny screen instead of engaging in what's happening in the world around us. So while so many of your photos take these small moments and these small details and help the person who looks at the photo notice them, do you also worry that photography can put up a wall between us and reality?
I don't really, for me and what I do, I don't think so. Because again, I'm doing still photographs and I'm not doing videos at concerts or still shots of those kind of things. Or I'm capturing moments again with my grandkids that are, to me, amazing, the expressions, and it's something different, and it captures just that single moment in time. And I enjoy it. I think people enjoy it. They seem to enjoy what I do. And again, those moments are not going to come back again, those expressions or those lighting situations where something just pops, or even those worn painted buildings that are appealing. Those things, they just appeal to me. And it makes me happy. It makes my day. So hopefully people don't think that it's a barrier or look at it that it's boring or oversaturated, I guess is what I could say.
How did you select the photos that you would pair with these essays?
Tracy sent me her essays and had me read them and then asked me to send her three images of mine that I in one of my libraries that I felt went along with that essay for me. And so I sent her three, and she picked the one for the book. And it was interesting because most of the essays, we both picked the same photo.
Yeah, we did.
Go with it. We did.
That's fascinating, especially because the photos do really feel right, but they are not images that you necessarily would, if I read this essay and thought, I would like to see a picture that goes along with this, I would pick a an abandoned mannequin with, you know, flaking paint on it. These are surprising photos that go with these stories. It's fascinating that the two of you saw the same thing. I mean, Tracy, tell me more about what you see in these pictures.
Well, we're glad to hear you say that, because that's kind of, I think, the phrase that we use most often is shared artistry. How can we, you know, and for many artists, when they're collaborating on a variety of things, it's not as much a 50-50 balance. It's just simply what's working organically and how we seem to lend an ear to one another, and the ideas just start to bubble over until we both realize in the moment that it's the right one. So like Lynn said, it's for her to give me the three for each essay, and I wouldn't have even a slightest bit of hesitation. I knew instantly that one of those was working just fine, and I didn't have to go back and question anything. I love that we can be separated and still have that connection. And then she, like she said, for us to most of the time choose the exact same one, it's like, oh, isn't that cool? So
there is a photo. There are many photos in the book that I really enjoy, Lynn, but I would love to talk about one in particular. I think it's my favorite photo in the book, and it shows the hand of a statue, a little bit of the statue, a little bit of the body, but the hand of the statue, and there are raindrops coming off the fingers of this statue. But tell me the story behind this photo.
My husband and I were coming back from North Carolina, and we were driving back, and we stopped in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it was pouring down rain again, the rain, and there was this park outside the hotel where we were staying, so I went and took a walk around, and there was this statue, and it was of these women marching for suffragette, and it struck me because the rain was coming down, and on the faces, it looked like tears running down the faces. But those raindrops then, in turn, came down and were dripping off the fingers of the statue. And I was just drawn to that, as a woman, of course, and as a visual person. So that's how I got that. I mean, it was just one of those moments, again, a single moment that would have been gone had I not taken advantage of it, never to become again.
I'm talking with Tracy Kelly and Lynn Casey. Tracy is a writer. Lynn is a photographer. They collaborated together on the new book, One Moment of a Single Day, Essays. And Tracy, I want to ask you about the essay that comes before that picture that we were just talking about, because I also really felt like it was a beautiful pairing. And then I got to the back of the book and I was reading Lynn's explanation of her photos, and then I thought it was an even better pairing, a more perfect pairing. So tell me a little bit about that essay, which takes place in a nail salon.
A nail salon in San Pedro, California. And basically, I got to hear a wonderful immigrant story. And this woman was so captivating and so full of life and joy. And we had an instant connection. And in some of those situations, and I've seen this before, it's not like I get my nails done all the time, but in certain situations when I've been in those moments, I notice that people are looking down on their phones or they're reading a magazine. And meanwhile, this other individual is providing such an incredible personal service, working on your fingernails or your toenails. And I can't do that. I have to talk to this person. And I got a great reward being able to hear about her emigration from Vietnam, and why that mattered to her and her family, and the new life that she was able to start in the United States, a life that she felt she couldn't have with her family where she was from, no matter how difficult it was to leave her home. And of course, that's it's a very relevant story that we're hearing repeated these days, and yet our moment was a very private and intimate moment until it wasn't. And so when Lynn chose the photo and we had to do the research, she couldn't quite remember exactly where the park was. And so we did some research as to where those statues existed. And then we find out that it's in honor of suffragettes. And it's like, wow, that's really just so copacetic. We just love this. And leaving that nail salon that day, I immediately started scratching something out on a piece of notebook paper because I knew that if I didn't, I was going to lose it. Now, what I was going to do with it in that time, I had no idea. And that's kind of the writer's mind. You know, we often don't have an idea of what we're going to do with things until we do. And that probably happened 2 years before I actually decided to develop it into a full essay and put it in the book.
In that essay, you, as you said, it was a wonderful moment of connection, and then it wasn't. And I want to talk more about that. Mm-hmm. And I know, again, you don't want to give a lot of things away, but you were connecting with this woman, learning about her culture, learning about her life in the United States, and then someone else came into the salon who wasn't interested in the culture. And he was talking about how listening to her speak in her native language just sounds like nonsense to him, and mm-hmm. really saying a lot of xenophobic, really ugly things. You listen to him in silence, and when you left with a lot of regrets. What mm-hmm. do you wish you had done?
Well, the warrior part of me wanted to stand up for her and put myself physically and literally between him and her and denounce him. And then I realized that I, in the swirl of confusion, actually, because I didn't have that bright moment until after I left the salon, and I realized that maybe that wouldn't have been the best thing because I didn't know if that individual was a regular customer of the salon. What would happen if I, as a total stranger, intruded in that way? And in seemingly good faith, but maybe not, because I really didn't know enough about the situation to interfere. Now, had I lived in the community, maybe it would have been a little bit different, but I was a total stranger. So it that not knowing if the regret is enough, not knowing if whenever we have a chance to stand up for the rights of other people, if we're doing it for our own reasons, or if we're doing it for the sake of overall societal good, we encounter those opportunities all the time. And I still, even now, wonder if I shouldn't have asserted myself a little bit more. And then there's a common sense part of me that says, no, if you weren't the right person for the right job in that moment.
In writing these essays and publishing these essays, I asked you earlier if it made you look at your work in a different way. Does it make you see yourself in a different way? I mean, this is a very interesting mirror to look at yourself in.
Lynn, what do you think? I'll let you start.
Well, I just feel proud. I had I have some things in a gallery in Elkhart, Indiana, and the owner of the gallery said something really wonderful to me. He said, 4 years ago when I started with you, you were more like a hobbyist, and look at you now. You're part of a published book. You're finding some success. So it hasn't changed me really deeply personally, other than just feeling that what I have done and what I see kind of matters to people. And that's important to me.
And I think that it's an aspect of, I'm always a writer, I'm a creative writer, I'm a business writer, but I like the aspect of collaboration. One of our editors and designers on this project was Chad Michael Cox, and he's been a longtime friend of ours. I have a writer's group who I rely on to kind of bounce ideas from. I have a collective of people who are also wonderful beta readers. But at the end of the day, like with any artistry, it's still yours, and you're always going to have a personal attachment to it. I think this project has allowed me to have just a little bit more of the, not only of the encouragement, but also of the initiative to continue my artistry. And that's kind of a shared message that Lynn and I have for anyone, is to do exactly that. Just keep putting art into the world and keep trying to make people notice things. I can't help but defer to a much more acknowledged and published writer than I am, Mary Oliver, and I'm paraphrasing greatly here when she said, you know, in this world of distraction, in this age of distraction, be careful to not look without noticing. And that is a message that I think the arts are able to convey frequently, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
You don't just share your essays in this book. You also try to give readers some of the tools that you've developed over the years mm-hmm. by sharing your reflections, again, a little bit of your philosophy, but also some prompts, some ways to help people reflect, some ways to help people be better listeners. What are you hoping people take away from the book?
Well, I think it's really simple in the sense that we all want to be seen and we all want to be heard and we desperately want to be valued. And a lot of that has to be, again, that shared intimacy and not the usual type of intimacy we're used to referring to, but more of a cognitive or a spiritual intimacy where we are all riding this planet together. And what can we do to continue to help maintain a sense of awareness and concern and positivity for others? And the arts do that. And mindful listening does that. So you move from a standpoint of active listening to reflective listening and really understand the other person, even if their values aren't the same as yours.
We are out of time, but Tracy Kelly and Lynn Casey, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charity.
The book is One Moment of a Single Day, Essays by Tracy Kelly, with photography from Lynn Casey. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Thank you.